Welcome to the Voices from the Frontline segment of the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour on KPFK Radio, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and streaming on the web for the world at www.kpfk.org. This is Tammy Banglu, and I'm here with my co-host Manuel Criollo. We're going to start the show with Rayan Alameed, Program Director of the San Francisco Chapter of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, joining us today to discuss Israel's current escalation in military aggression in Gaza and Lebanon. Then we'll be joined by Mario Cuellar of Casa El Salvador to discuss the current wave of government repression and the reemergence of death squads in El Salvador. Then we're going to close the show with Reverend Lucius Walker of Pastors for Peace. Having just returned from Cuba, he'll talk about the recent updated plan by the Bush administration to undermine the Cuban government. We'll be right back. Beyond the cloud, it's been a long So we'd like to welcome Rayan Alameed to the show. Rayan is the program director of San Francisco chapter of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee and an editor of Left Turn magazine. Rayan was born and raised in Lebanon, where most of his family still lives. He joins us to discuss Israel's recent military escalation. Welcome to the show, Rayan.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. So as our listeners will know, in our last segment on Palestine discussed the U.S. and Israeli orchestrated international sanctions against the Palestinians since the January election of the Hamas-led parliament and the undermining of the Hamas-led Palestinian Authority. So could you, Rayan, talk to us about the sequence of events that led to this military expansion, this two-pronged escalation, both in Gaza and Lebanon, and particularly because with all the escalation inside Lebanon, people forget that it's not a reoccupation, but it's an intensification of the occupation inside Gaza, even after the pullouts of last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think people need to realize that what's been happening in Palestine led to this two-front war by Israel on Palestine, on specifically Gaza and South Lebanon, had started probably at the time when Hamas had won the election, as you had mentioned. And since that time, since the time when the Palestinian people in a democratic and free election had decided to choose Hamas as their representative government, and it's not because I think Palestinians are mostly ideologically closer to Hamas. I think that the Palestinian public is actually more secular, historically been so. But one of the reasons that Hamas won was as a message to Israel and the United States that the so-called peace process is a big sham. It has brought them absolutely nothing as far as freedom, as far as any sort of human rights or future for a real Palestinian homeland and state. So it was a message to the Israelis and to the United States. But it was also a message to Fatah and a corrupt government in the PA, their previous representatives. And since then, I think things escalated in such a way, and it was focused mostly on Gaza most recently. But if people really want to know what has been happening in Gaza in the last few months, all they have to do is read some of the reports that came out in the UN. Some of them mentioned that there was in a month's time in March, from the beginning of March, actually the last the last 2 weeks in March, there was more than 150 shells being dropped on Gaza a day. And that's according to the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. It's an office in the UN. And so that means it fired more than 2,300 artillery and tank shells into Gaza during that period of time. So there's a lot of things that preceded it. I just want to mention one more event that preceded the kidnapping of the soldier, the Israeli soldier, by the Palestinians on June 25th. So in the month before that, that means in June, of this year, before the kidnapping of the soldier, there was 49 Palestinians killed and 150 women and 150 injured. That includes women and children. So people have to realize that, you know, this attack didn't come out of anywhere, and it's been intensifying, especially in Gaza, but now, you know, the catastrophe that's unfolding in Lebanon only shows that Israel has absolutely no conscience and no sense of ability to know how to deal with any of its situation other than with violence.
So this recent move into Lebanon, what preceded that, and why Lebanon? What is the tie, and what does that mean for Israeli in terms of their geopolitical power and the ramifications that this is going to have inside that region?
Well, Lebanon was occupied by Israel for 22 years from approximately, at least the south of Lebanon was occupied from 1982 to 2000, but they actually had entered in 1978. And Hezbollah, a resistance group, a Shia resistance group, most of the people in south Lebanon happened to be Shia, was born as a result of that occupation. So Hezbollah did not exist in Lebanon until 1983 or 1984, probably, when it was more formalized. So that group had garnered support by the Lebanese, specifically the Lebanese in the south, who had been occupied, killed, and attacked by Israel, had joined this group, Hezbollah, and it became a resistance force to the occupation. So basically that's where Lebanon's role had been before this. And in 2000, Hezbollah specifically, but also other groups in Lebanon, had pushed out Israel. And in the end, South Lebanon was somewhat of a Vietnam for Israel. And I think right now part of what's going on is Israel is trying to pay back not just Hezbollah, but also the Lebanese people. It has taken this opportunity as a result of an attack on a military occupation army, or at least military personnel in northern Israel, in order to trade and exchange prisoners. That's the only way that Lebanese prisoners have been released before from Israeli jails, and that's how it was going to happen again. There is 9,000 Palestinian prisoners, but there's also some Arab and Lebanese prisoners in Israeli jails. And as people know, previously, Israel has released prisoners in an exchange for Israelis. And so Hezbollah kidnapped the two soldiers, and in the operation, other Israeli soldiers got killed, and this is how it all started. But obviously, from what we're seeing right now happen, Israel had a plan to not only make the Lebanese population pay heavily for its support for Hezbollah, but to damage the civilian infrastructure in Lebanon, one that's been you know, rebuilt over the last 15 years, and now is being destroyed, you know, in a matter of weeks.
Rayan, I understand that you have family in southern Lebanon, and you've been in recent contact with them. What's the situation like on the ground?
Well, it's pretty horrendous for some of my family that lives in the suburbs of Beirut, in the Shia suburbs, where they're calling it Hezbollah strongholds, when all it is mostly working class people that live in the southern suburbs, mostly Shias, specifically a neighborhood called Dahiye. Harakat Hriq is even a more specific name of an area that's been totally flattened because of its support for Hezbollah. And it's not support in the sense that they're actually part of the group. They're just people who respect the fact that Hezbollah was able to kick out Israel, and to, you know, defend the South against Israeli aggression. So as a result of that, they have flattened the homes of approximately 50,000 people. This is something that you wouldn't hear in regular news. You don't hear that 50,000 people had lost their homes and hundreds of thousands have been made refugees now as a result of the really horrific attack Israel is doing right now on Lebanon, the attack that's attacking civilians, that's killing civilians, and it's meant to get them back, or, you know, pay them back for the fact that they resisted occupation previously, and that there is support for the Palestinian cause within South Lebanon, their solidarity with the Palestinians during a time when the Palestinians are in such need of solidarity. The rest of the world is being silent, you know, as the Gazans being killed by the dozens over the last few months, and including what you had mentioned before, a economic embargo that was choking people, the most vulnerable in the society and in those communities, being economically choked, and as a result, creating a horrific situation.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that we just are seeing is that the UN again vetoed a UN Security Council that condemned Gaza's incursion by Israel. And this is out of the last 9 vetoes, 8 of them have been cast by the U.S. and 7 of them had concerned the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. So one of the things that we're one of the things, if we can go back to, is if you can talk to us a little bit about the possible ramifications in terms of the geopolitical nature as people are talking about Syria, as people are talking about the connections between Syria and Iran. And so what are the implications in terms of a further escalation either by Israeli forces or possibly U.S. forces? And even though indirectly the U.S. has still continued to, a lot of the arms are still supplied by the U.S. government and supported by the U.S. military.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's definitely a U.S. role in this. Geopolitically, as far as the region as a whole, this opens up, I think, to the U.S. some real opportunities to advance what they want to do as far as the Middle East, and that's making sure all the countries are compliant. The only two countries that aren't compliant to the will of the U.S. right now there are Syria and Iran. And Syria and Iran both have connections to Hezbollah. Hezbollah gets its funding from Iran. Syria supports it in other ways. But in reality, Hezbollah did this on their own. The fact that it's being played up as a pawn by Syria or Iran, that Hezbollah is doing this as a result of pressure, is not true. I think that this was carried on as far as the operation on their own. The United States has used Israel as a subcontractor of war previously. It uses its weapons, but the U.S. Doesn't have to get too involved in things like this. They can just have Israel do it. And one of the things that they can possibly do is use this as a pretense to attack Syria. If you've been following, you know, some of the rhetoric coming out of the White House and the Bush administration, that might be one of their goals. Syria is uncompliant to the administration there, or the dictatorship. I'm not too happy about the Syrian government, but the dictatorship there isn't compliant with the U.S. plans for the region, and Syria is very vulnerable to an attack by Israel. I don't think the government would be able to hold if it's attacked and is defeated by Israel in some sort of confrontation. The other thing is, like you said, Iran. This might be a way to reach Iran. The U.S. has been weakened by the Iraqi war, by the fact that the Iraq war has gone so badly for them. So there isn't going to be any real support in this country for any more moves, whether on Syria or Iran. Not that they wouldn't do it, but it might be easier for them to have Israel, you know, whether it's bomb the nuclear sites or create the conditions where both Israel and the United States might take action, direct action against Iran.
And this, I mean, switching a little bit, but this, at the same time that this is all happening, what's been shadowed is I understand, an important Hamas-Fatah agreement, a strategic approach in terms of the struggle for Palestinian national rights. Is that, can you talk a little bit about that and what are the different components of it?
I mean, I think you're talking about the fact that there had been some agreement on working together and something that was a major issue as far as negotiating as a Palestinian people. It seemed like right before this happened, there was an agreement by Fatah, before the escalation on Gaza, there was an agreement by Fatah and Hamas to work together as far as negotiating with Israel and building their government in order to support their people. And that was a major victory and a major event that happened that was overshadowed by what happened afterwards. The Israel and the United States didn't even acknowledge that there was some concessions made by that group around how to negotiate. It was dismissed because it seemed like it didn't fit into their plans at the time. So I think that's what you're referring to.
And then in terms of what's going on inside Gaza, I understand that they're on the brink of public health. I mean, just the devastations through the military attacks and the economic blockade. Have you heard from any folks there on what the conditions are like?
Well, we had been hearing before the escalation in Lebanon about the dire situation in Gaza, specifically when it comes to medicine, hospitals. They don't have, they're running out of, you know, inventory for all sorts of, you know, for operations, for sort of emergency situations. So the situation is pretty bad, and it's getting worse. At this time, no one's paying attention to what's happening in Gaza. And yesterday, Israel actually, you know, bombed the foreign ministry, for example, just to kind of continue its operation, to, like, make sure that any sort of representative government or infrastructure for the Palestinians does not exist, to whether to represent themselves in negotiations or to carry on resistance. So the situation in Gaza is horrible. It's getting worse. I think that there's definitely an emergency humanitarian situation that's developed over the last few weeks, and people need to pay attention to that.
On the phone we have Rayan Elamine, Program Director of the San Francisco Chapter of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. Rayan, why don't we just move a little bit back to home? You know, the show is called Voices from the Front Lines, and we'd like to know what the hell can we do now, because the situation seems pretty dire, and unfortunately, from what we see in most mainstream media, it's obviously this is not the type of information we're getting at all. So what do you, does ADC in any way have a plan to begin to really, you know, sort of make a major pushback about even the debate that's happening at this moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think that obviously people can take different strategies. One of the things we're asking people to do is to make sure that what's being represented in the media, and we're definitely not talking about stations like yours, which give, you know, authentic voices and try to, like, relay the facts as opposed to perpetuate the propaganda of the government. So to at least approach the mainstream media with letters and with phone calls and whatever it takes to make sure that the disaster that Israel is laying in Palestine and in Lebanon is not misrepresented as some sort of symmetry, you know, as some sort of equal partners. This is one of the most, you know, heavily armed country with the most sophisticated military laying siege on primarily a small guerrilla army and mostly civilians, and it's going unchecked. So the media has to be accountable to the horrific things that are happening right now. One of the reasons why people in this country don't respond to these things is because the propaganda that's being put out there by the media and by the government is horrific. It's unbelievable, you know, especially at times like this when Israel is involved, then everything goes out the door and there's no representation, true representation of the humanitarian disaster that's going on in Lebanon. So we're doing that. We had protests today at the Israeli consulate that was done by some Jewish groups that are in solidarity with the Lebanese and the Palestinians. We had other protests at the Israeli consulates for the last two Thursdays, so people need to do that. And obviously call up your representatives. But, you know, in cases like this, we find out that sometimes, you know, the grassroots, you know, education and maybe even media activism is better than calling your representatives, but obviously call your representatives. Tell them that what's happening in Lebanon needs to be responded to, and it could be stopped by just a few words by this administration, which is, you know, it's unbelievable that they haven't asked for a ceasefire. And like you mentioned before, they've actually vetoed any action by the UN. I just want to say that my family, I have, you know, uncles and three cousins that have lost their homes. I've had another uncle and a cousin stuck in Tyre, in a city called Tyre in the south, in a bomb shelter for 3 days. And when they came out, a bomb landed right next to them. If you're watching the news wires, yesterday in Tyre, 22 people died in a building. That's their building. My father is in an apartment building close to the airport and in front of a major highway that goes down to the south of Lebanon, all of which have been targets of these gunships that have been firing away at anything that moves, you know, on that highway and targeting the airport. And people are traumatized. They are in a situation where they're being told to sometimes leave the areas. The Israeli military army is telling them to leave the area. And when people leave the area, they're being targeted. There's a minivan of 15 people that got targeted just today next to a town called Saida. There was a whole family a couple of days ago, also the same situation. People fleeing north on the highway, obviously not militants, going further away. They know that these are civilians in a van escaping, and they're targeting them directly. That's what's going on in Lebanon. It's, you know, they're shooting civilians left and right, and the U.S. has done absolutely nothing. In fact, it's encouraged the humanitarian disaster that's happening.
Well, thank you, Rayan, for sharing that with us, and you know, we'll be thinking about your family over in Lebanon. For our listeners, could you close up with where they can get a hold of folks in the ADC or more information?
Yeah, if you, I mean, obviously there is a national group, ADC.org would be the national group, and I think they're having a demonstration tomorrow, Tuesday, at the White House. This is national information, and here in the Bay Area, you can go to our website, www.adcsf.org, or you can call 415-861-7444.
Again, that was www.adc.org, and we'll be right up with Mario Cuellar.